Rachel Grimm, and welcome to the podcast With All Your Mind. I'm here to help us understand the Bible with cultural and historical context, linguistic info, and other cool stuff. Enjoy. Hey, good afternoon, guys. This is Rachel, and this is With All Your Mind. Surprise! We're doing more episodes. I really thought that after season two, I would just be all done with the podcast because of the masters that I'm going to be doing in another month or so. But I was just praying one day and it felt like God was saying, stop praying and go get some podcast episodes together. And I was like, okay. And I got my laptop out and banged out a whole little series that we're going to do. So here we are. It's 2024, and I'll give you a little update on my life and what's going on with me, especially with what I've been studying and whatnot, because it's been since May of 2023 since I've recorded anything. So that's a good 7 months ago. So there's a lot that's been going on since then. So let's see. The reason why I stopped recording podcast episodes is that I started basically what was an audit course to get ready to do this master's program that I'll be doing in another month. And the program is Biblical Hebrew Masters. And when I had my language evaluation with a professor for the university that I'll be attending, he told me basically, you're good, but you might want to fill in a few gaps in your knowledge. And here I can send you this course. Just buy the books, do all the assignments, send them to me, and by the time you're done, you should be at least where you need to be for this program. So that's what I did from July until November. It took me a good while. It was a full semester program, and this university full-time is just taking two of these classes at a time. So doing one of them is half-time. So it was definitely intensive, and that's what I'm going to be doing for the next 2 years. Is classes for this program. So that's what I will be doing with most of my time for the next 2 years. So when and if I record podcast episodes again, it'll be in and around what school allows. And then in November, I attended a biblical studies conference. It's called SBL, the Society of Biblical Literature. And I went to this one other time, exactly 10 years ago. And when I went to it 10 years ago, it was way over my head. And I thought, there's no way I'll ever feel competent going to one of these again. And it's just way too academic and way too intellectual about the Bible. I don't even like it, blah, blah, blah. Well, this time when I went to sessions that were mostly about Hebrew linguistics. And I loved it, and I learned a lot, and some of the stuff that I learned at this conference is the stuff that I'm going to be telling you guys in this podcast series, believe it or not. So you're going to be getting stuff from PhDs and master's students in biblical studies and Hebrew courses and all kinds of things. Like, some of them are just in linguistics, it was deep stuff. But there was some of it that was really good, and I thought, you know what, this is not stuff that is just for PhD students and professors of Hebrew at universities. This is stuff that would help you and me to learn the Bible better, to understand it easier, just to be able to understand, what are we reading? Like, why does it sound that way? Why is it written that way? And it's really good stuff. So this season, I don't have a good title for it, for the overall theme. There is an overall theme, and it's basically the linguistic and cultural influences on the Bible. What do Greek and Hebrew do that we can see and hear when we read the Bible that we don't necessarily understand that that's Greek and Hebrew influences? I don't know if that sounds interesting to you. It doesn't sound terribly interesting to me. So it's just a horrible title, because it's not really a title at all. It's just a little description. But wait until we get into it, and I hope you'll love it, because I'm loving it, and it's really cool stuff. So we went through some of these things, mostly in season one, most especially in season one, episode one, where I did a really 10,000 foot view of the languages and cultures and just general language background of the Bible. And then we went into some historical and cultural context of the Bible. Those were just kind of snapshots. We're going to go into more of a deeper dive on those topics for this season. So today, we're just talking about these generalities. I'll give you a big overview. And this is going to be a pretty short season unless something happens. I only have about a month and a half to prepare all of this before my master's classes start. But basically, we're going to do at least 7 episodes, this one, and then we're going to do about 5 that focus on Hebrew and Hebrew culture and Semitic culture, and we'll talk about all of these things. And then 1 or 2 episodes about Greek culture and Greek influence and the Greek world of the Bible and where you can see that. What things that are mentioned that we just think of as Bible stuff are actually Hebrew stuff or Semitic stuff or Greek stuff or even Roman stuff. There was one thing that I read about and I was like, oh, that totally changes my mental image of this one scene in an epistle of Paul's. And I'm like, this is great. You know, it's helping me to imagine the world of the Bible in such a more probably accurate way. So this season, we're just going to get into more particulars about how we can imagine the world of the Bible and how it has influenced our way of thinking. And what things can we kind of push to the side a little bit as, well, this is how they said that. How do we understand it? So let me give you just some overviews. If you didn't listen to season one, episode one, I would do that. Before you start the season, I would definitely do that. It gives a lot of detail and a lot of facts that I'm not getting into in this season. There's just too many. I'm not going to do it all over again. Yeah, but here's the basics that you need to know. The Old Testament is mostly written in Hebrew. There are parts in Daniel and Ezra that are written on Aramaic, but the vast majority of the Old Testament is written in Hebrew. Hebrew is a Semitic language. That means that it's a natural language. It's not the language of heaven. We don't know what language God speaks or what they spoke in the Garden of Eden. We just don't know. Was it Hebrew? Possibly, but we have no clue. So if you've ever been raised to think that Hebrew is some special God language, it's really hard to make that argument. And we might get that argument because God gives his name in Hebrew. But as far as it being a special language, I'm going to do a whole master's in it. I think it's special. But I also think that Russian is really special. And I really think that Japanese is really special. It's a language. And it's a part of the Semitic language group, the family of languages. And that is a part of the Afro-Asiatic language group. And other languages that are related to Hebrew are Aramaic, Arabic, and other languages that are in the Horn of Africa, which is generally speaking like Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somalia. And then there are other languages and groups of peoples that speak Semitic languages across the middle, like Southern Sahara area. One of the things that I learned when I was researching for this episode is that the language Hausa is a Semitic language. And I had no clue before. I had a student about 12 years ago that I had this guy in my class when I was teaching ESL. And this was in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And his name was Abdullahi. He was a Muslim guy from Niger. We say Niger. And he spoke Hausa. And so I whenever I had students from different countries, I would always ask them about their country and what it was like and what language did they speak and all these kinds of things. And so now when I think of Hausa, I think of Abdullahi. And he was this like jokester, perpetual smile on his face, and just a nice guy. And now that I know Hausa is a Semitic language, I think, this guy this immigrant from Niger who now, well, it's 12 years ago now. I don't know what he does now. But at the time, he was working a very manual labor job because he didn't have a degree and his English wasn't that good. So when he came to Pennsylvania, he had to take a very, what we would consider, basic manual labor job. And I have been spending like, what, half my life learning Hebrew. And because his language, his native language, is similar to Hebrew in that it would have a lot of the same basic elements, he could probably pick up Hebrew in a year or two. And I would be over here studying Hebrew for 10 years and get to the point where he could get in a year. Also, when I was at SBL, the university that I'm going to attend had a faculty dinner. I get to know each other, alumni, faculty, current students, and for me, they included me, prospective students. So we met at this Mexican restaurant in San Antonio, and there was about 10 of us, and a lot of them were almost finishing their programs or were alumni. One guy had never even gone to the program, and he was a friend of one of the professors, and he just helped out with things here and there. But two guys there were Bible translators, because this university also has a Bible translation program. So I talked to these guys a lot. I was sitting next to them. One guy was from Zambia, and I forget what countries he did translation in. He named a couple, so I think I just couldn't hold all of the names in my head. But the other guy was from Ethiopia, and he was doing Bible translation, I think, in Malawi. So Native Africans working with other Native Africans on Bible translation. And the guy from Ethiopia spoke Amharic. Amharic is a Semitic language. And so, you know, he's doing Bible translation. He has learned Hebrew. So I asked him, because we had been talking at this table about the difficulty of Hebrew. Like, we're all studying it. We all know this is a tough subject. And it is, guys. It is tough. Like, it might be why I'm into it, because I need a bottomless pit of something to study, and Hebrew will supply that. But this guy, the Amharic speaker from Ethiopia, I asked him, how hard is it for you to learn Hebrew? And he kind of just shrugged his shoulders and looked around and said, meh, not bad. I'm like, oh my goodness. So, you know, some people have real huge advantages with Hebrew because it's a natural language. It's a Semitic language. And if you already know Semitic languages, it's not going to be that bad for you. Hebrew fits into a natural world. It is part of the natural world. So the Old Testament is mostly written in Hebrew. The New Testament is written in Greek, what we particularly call Koine Greek. We call it Koine, and this is what was spoken by the common people, Koine means common, between 300 BC and about 300 AD in the whole ancient Near East and the Eastern Mediterranean. We have to distinguish it because classical Greek is from the time of Homer, which is at about 800 BC. So you can't lump it all together, though most people do. But there's classical Greek, and then there's Koine Greek, and then there's modern Greek. And I'm sure there's other stages in there from, I don't know, the Middle Ages or whatnot. So Koine Greek is what the New Testament is written in. And because we have so many influences in the Bible through politics, through language, through culture, we can look at the Old Testament and see the effects of Semitic peoples and Semitic customs and Semitic ways of saying things, and then Semitic language tendencies, and Hebrew linguistics influenced the way things were written, and we're going to get into that. And then with Greek, or maybe we could say in the New Testament, we see the influences of Greek culture and Roman culture and the Greek language. So we're going to look at these things and say, that thing right there, have you ever noticed that thing right there? There's a reason it's that way. And this is why. And maybe you've never noticed before, and it'll just add to the things that you notice about the Bible. Maybe you have noticed before, and you've been confused about. Or maybe you have noticed before, but it was just a feeling, a sense. And that's the way I was with some of these things. So in this little series, we're just diving deeper into what do these things affect? How do they influence, change, otherwise shape and form the Bible? And what effect does that have on us? Because it does. If you read something that was written by a native English speaker from, say, Indiana, you are going to hear certain tendencies in how they write. If you read something written by an English speaker who grew up in India, that is going to have a whole different feel. I was thinking too about different styles of literature, like American classical literature, English literature, British literature, and Russian literature. I've read, you know, if you read anything by Tolstoy or Dostoevsky, Dickens, they all have different styles and they have all different things that they take for granted that you know that they mention in their literature, or different philosophies or different histories. Like in when you read Tolstoy, he pulls in so much political ideology and things that were being talked about in his day. The woman's role in society was a huge topic when he was writing Anna Karenina and War and Peace, and that comes out in it. So there's stuff like that. So anyway, back to what I'm talking about. So we're going to talk about these kind of trickle-down effects of what language and culture have an influence on, so that we're going to end up talking about Semitic expressions, Semitic types of poetry, and ways to say yes and no. Yeah, you didn't think that you couldn't take that for granted, but yeah, there are actually three different systems for how to say yes and no in the world. I did not know that before this year. Taking that audit course for Hebrew really helped with some things, and then going to SBL, this conference. Oh, I never finished talking about that, did I? Okay. Yeah, I learned so much, and there was a couple of presentations that were done that I've actually emailed the people and asked for their papers because I need to include it in with my resources just in case you guys want to read their papers too. I hope they get back to me. They haven't yet. But I learned a lot. I'm looking forward to going back again, and not just because next year is in San Diego and I'll be able to see some friends. So here's the cool part. By the end of the series, we're not just going to look and see, oh, the way that Hebrew linguistics is affects how they had to say it this way. We're not just going to stop there. Or, hey, Greeks usually did this way. And so, oh, okay, that's what they're doing in the Bible, and that's why they're doing it that way. We're not just stopping there. At the very end of this little season, 7 or 8 episodes, we're going to take a look at what things, what sayings, what cultural influences can you see in Jesus' life and the way that Jesus talked and the way that Jesus dressed and how he ate his food. What can we see in his life? How did he interact with the cultures that were around him? And what does that say? Because it actually says a lot. I am reading in John right now. No. I'm reading in Acts right now for my quiet time. I was reading in John, and I'm going to have to reread it because about halfway through the book, I had been noticing already how Jesus just can't be manipulated. And if you've ever read the Gospels, you know what I'm talking about, where the Jewish religious leaders, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they're all trying to trip him up. They're all trying to trap him into saying something that somebody's going to get angry about or Rome can condemn him for. They're just trying to catch him some way, somehow. That's just their goal. And Jesus evades these traps like every single time. He says something incredibly wise that just bypasses their question completely while also completely answering it. And you're like, how did you do that? Because he's God, that's why. But he can't be manipulated. And the same thing goes for cultural influences. He never condemns a culture, and he's a part of it in very interesting ways. And we'll talk about that and we'll show that. So I hope you guys get excited about that and kind of think about influence from culture, means so much. It does so much. And we talk about it a lot, you know, with media and movies and what should a Christian watch and how should they interact with culture and how much should they be on their own, you know, kind of in their own bubble? Should you send your kids to public school? Should you send them to private school? All of these different things. It's all about cultural influences, right? Do you see yourself as a cultural influence? Do you avoid cultural influences? On and on. We're going to see how Jesus did it. And it's really cool because once you bring out, you kind of raise to the surface and above the surface what these cultural influences are and these linguistic influences, and then see how Jesus chooses to live his life. It's really cool. So I'm really looking forward to it with you guys. I hope you are too. We're going to stop there. Look forward to the first one, and I'll see you guys later. Bye.